Hey, what's going on? This is Jeremy Thoen, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems and host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to share an interview with my friend Trey Griggs of Beta Consulting. We get into Trey's rebrand of Beta. He originally had a logo that he made that had a picture of himself on it, and then his staff actually wanted to do a rebrand. So we kind of get into what branding is and how they went about that rebrand, because it's a lot of work and a lot of different considerations. Trey always has a wealth of knowledge. Hope you enjoy the episode. Hey, Trey, welcome back to 3PL Live. I'm excited to have you for, what is this, like the third time maybe?
Excited to be back, man. You get like a golden dish or something, some sort of trophy.
So let's talk a little bit about business. Like, you started your business about 3 years ago and you're definitely seeing a lot of success. Tell me a little bit what's going on in the business. And for the subject of this interview, we're going to talk about your rebrand, but just give me a little bit of high level what's going on with the business.
Yeah, it's been a great start to 2024. We had our best month in January that we ever had, followed by a really good month in February that would have been our best month if it hadn't been for January. So great start to the year for us. Some great clients that we're working with now, some logos that people are starting to recognize, which is cool. More than anything, our team, this iteration of our team is phenomenal. We've got a great cast and crew that are making things happen. Some awesome contractors that are helping us out on some things as well. I heard this one time and it made a lot of sense now. It didn't make sense at the time, but it makes sense now. I heard somebody say to me, the moment you figure out where you want to go, the vehicle will show up to take you there. Hmm. I didn't exactly know what that meant, but now I know. You know, now that we know exactly where we're headed, which is helping companies to truly build their brand, to really facilitate their sales and marketing and get some good results in that regard, which really starts with your brand, how you're communicating in the marketplace and those types of things. Now that we know that's where we're headed, now the pieces are just starting to fall into place and it's getting really exciting, really fun. And now it's just a matter of maintaining high quality, having good systems and processes in place to ensure that happens, and figuring out how to scale a little bit. So these are nice problems to have, but we're having a fun time doing it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool that you were able to do that. And you're what, at 11,000 or so followers on LinkedIn? So that's probably really a great way to get some leads too, and kind of some generation for there, like getting yourself out there.
Oh, 100%. I tell people this all the time who are thinking about becoming entrepreneurs. My number one piece of advice is to spend 6 months building your network. Because building your network, especially on LinkedIn, but building your network out there, whether it's an email distribution list or on social media platforms, those are your at-bats when you go out and start your own company. You know, that's the audience that's going to be there initially to take interest in and hopefully purchase your product or service. So the more that you have, the more at-bats you get, the easier it is to start off in a positive way. And I'm very thankful as an entrepreneur. I mean, There's only been, I think, 2 months that I didn't pay myself right away at the beginning of the month like I normally do. To me, that's really exciting that we've, you know, had revenue and made payroll every month for 26 months now, going on 27. To me, that's a really exciting, you know, measuring stick, even though it hasn't maybe gone as fast as we would like, or the numbers aren't maybe what we had hoped for. At the same time, I look back and think, not only providing for my family, but also for those on our team. And we haven't missed a beat yet with that, which is, I'm really satisfied to say that.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how you met Coleman. Is he your director of operations, or what is his title?
Yeah, VP of operations is his title right now. He's the glue man. He keeps everything going. Man, Coleman and I met April of 2020, right when COVID was starting. And he reached out to me for a job. He was a recruiter at the time. And I was like, nah, I'm good. No, thanks, man. But you should come to our Friday lunch, because we just started a lunch that is now known as Word on the Street. We just started that as a Zoom call, just a lunch call with people in the industry, just to keep up, see what's going on, not be alone, you know, for the whole week kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Coleman started coming and he never left. We became really good friends. And the moment that I knew that I needed a number two or a true right hand, person from the industry who knew the industry, he was a top choice and it worked out.
Yeah, that's a bold move. And it was really good that it did, because it allows you to focus more like on sales and you can focus more on like operations. Let's talk a little bit about your rebrand. I love the new style of like the logo and the hat. How did it all come about? And rebranding is a big pain in the ass. So what tips do you have for us, that any other people that are looking to rebrand as like a software company or anything? Because we've even talked about it internally at 3PL Systems at times about potentially doing a rebrand. And I know it's a lot of work. So like, tell me about your experience and journey.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a lot of work. At the same time, I think we were so committed to it that it didn't feel as heavy of a lift as maybe it was, because I think there was so much energy and excitement around it. The logo that we had before was really just a text logo. That's all it was. Because I had my personal logo, my cartoon, as a lot of people have seen out on social media. And I had a graphic designer say to me, you know, your right ear there kind of looks like a bee. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Let's use that. And so we just took that and made it the B and then found some cursive letters to match it to create Beta. And that's literally the extent to what our first logo was all about. And it wasn't like we'd spent a lot of time on that. And so when the team came to me, they approached me and said, hey, would you be okay with us looking at creating a real logo? And they were nervous that I would be like, take it personal, like I'd be offended. But I wasn't, because the biggest lesson I'd been learning at that time through some of my mentors and networks that I'm in is that in order for us to really grow, I have to get out of the way. Like, I'm the problem. Taylor Swift's song Antihero is my theme song for a long time. It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. You know, like that's that was the problem. So when they came to me and said, hey, we'd like to you know, create a new logo. Are you okay with that? I was like, yeah, go for it. Like, I need it. This was like first test of me just getting out of the way and let them run. And so I think also the fact that my team, it was their initiative and their desire also, I think, made it easier because they put in a lot of extra time, a lot of long hours to go through some, you know, different ideas, and the whole ideation process is a long process from a branding perspective, but they had a lot of energy and a lot of excitement for it and came up with a couple of different options. And then they settled on one and presented it. And we didn't change it hardly at all. In fact, this is the original logo. It's hard to see. This is the original logo, but the only difference is that the C, the little gap in the C, is shorter here than it is on our final logo. We just made that C just a little bit bigger, so it was easier to tell that it was a C. That was it. Mm-hmm. We didn't change anything else. And that was pretty exciting for them to do that. And then at that point, we started making a list of everything that needed to change. The website, any deliverables that go out, the logo on our invoices, the logo on our HubSpot, just all the different places where our brand existed. We just started making a list of all the things that need to be changed. And then we would just spend extra time, like on Friday afternoons or sometimes over the weekend, just going through and making those changes, especially as we got close to launch date, which was just in February this year. We got close to making those changes. The biggest lift was redoing our website. We redid some of the content, especially now that our marketing playbook for logistics and tech companies is a little more finalized. We put a little more effort into that on our website and try to make that a little bit easier to understand, make sure the color schemes all work well and that everything functions properly and all the links work and all that kind of stuff. And so once we had that, done, it was, looking back, it just didn't seem like as big of a lift as maybe it is, because we had so much excitement and energy and enthusiasm for the project.
And for those listening that can't actually see the logo, how would you describe that? And you said there was only one iteration. They like nailed it the first time, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, they nailed it the first time. Only one iteration. And I guess I'll ask you, what do you see when you look at the logo? Let's start with that.
Yeah, I see like sound waves. That's kind of what I see. Yeah, I kind of see like radio
waves.
That's
exactly right. Yeah, it's essentially a sound wave. And the reason why they captured that was because most of the things that we do are around communication, whether it's podcasting, messaging, testimonial content, video content, public speaking, writing, like all of it is all about communicating. And so the sound wave was a great way to do that. And it also allowed us to put the letters into the logo. So the middle three waves are the BCG. It captures our initials right inside the logo as well. It's something that can be iconic in the sense that you can put it on something and it kind of stands out. It pops a little bit. It can go on anything from a swag perspective. So I feel like they did a really good job, but it's just a sound wave. It's got a couple of Easter eggs that are hidden in there. If anybody has any ideas what those are, they can send them our way. But there's a few hidden meanings in the logo as well. But primarily, it's meant to reflect a sound wave.
I like the idea of the sound wave because you guys are all about communication, podcasting, video, messaging. It makes a lot of sense. Did you kind of talk to LinkedIn about what you were doing, like rebranding as you were doing it, like building in public style? Or did you just sort of just do it in like the dark and then just come out with it all at once?
That's a good question. We did not build in public. There's a part of me that wants to do more of that type of stuff, talking about what we do. I haven't quite gotten past myself yet in that regard. So we did a little bit of like a teaser, if something's coming kind of a thing, some announcements about that. And then we did a video after the fact. Afterwards, we did a video where I got on a call on StreamYard with the entire team, and we talked through the process and they talked through what they were thinking about, why they wanted to do it. And we're starting to drop some of those videos. So a little behind the scenes look on that, but we did not build in public ahead of time. Maybe one of these days I'll have the confidence to do that. I'm incredibly, I have great admiration and respect for people who do build in public, because I think it shows a level of humility and confidence that is unique. To have the humility to put your stuff out there when it's imperfect, but to have the confidence to not be negatively impacted by what people say potentially is a pretty rare combination. So it's really cool when people do that. I have a lot of admiration and respect for people to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Why do you think that people, your company and your staff approached you, which I thought was cool because they were like looking to rebrand for beta, but I'm curious too, like, why do you think other companies like rebrand? The only one that really comes, there's a couple that come to mind, or one for sure, like Carrier Direct that went to like Metaphora. Like, why do you think that they did that? Do you think that was just because like that name?
Theirs was prompted by the name change for sure. I mean, if you're going to change your name, it kind of almost requires that you rebrand in how you're doing that. A&W Weber did a rebrand this year. I think they kept the logo, but they kind of changed a little bit about how their look and feel of what they were doing. I think it's one of those things that is kind of an afterthought once you have your initial logo. A lot of people have trouble parting with an initial logo or initial look and feel, initial color scheme. I mean, we were blue for the first 2 years, and now we've got this kind of sage green, black and white sage green kind of look going. So I think some people get a little tied to it, get connected. I think some people are afraid that the market won't go with that change or go with the flow, or that it's going to disrupt maybe sales or disrupt operations or something like that. I think what I've learned, though, is that rebranding is something that should be pretty personal. It should matter to you because people don't really buy because of a logo. Like, people aren't buying our services because they like our logo. It might be something that they, you know, appreciate or enjoy, but the reason that they buy our services is because of the value that we bring. So rebranding is an opportunity to get a few more eyeballs looking your way. That's always nice to have that. But I think it's something that from a personal standpoint, like, it just has to matter to you. And so for our company, what I love the most about our rebrand, more than anything, even though there's a lot of things I love about it, Jeremy, what I love the most about the rebrand is how our team has a greater sense of ownership of our company now than they did before. Like, they feel like this is their brand. Mm. This is their company. And that's one of the things that, again, last year that I learned that I have to get out of the way. They have to step up and I have to step back in order for us to really be a great company. Knowing what I know now, I would hesitate even less to say yes, because it's brought a level of ownership for them that I can just see. I can see in their attitude. I can see in their work ethic, which is stronger now than it was before, which is crazy because it was strong before, but now it seems like it's even stronger. Like, they're seeing the company almost like an owner.
Interesting.
And taking ownership over some of that stuff.
Coleman actually gave me a couple stickers at Manifest of the new logo. So I thought that was really cool. You could tell that he was really pumped, like, on everything. Yeah, I could feel that like vibe or that energy, transfer of energy there for sure, which I think is really cool. How did you'd mentioned like standing at it, like, do you think that a lot of leaders like just don't listen or like don't take feedback or just like want to like lead too much without listening and not like allowing their team to sort of do their thing?
Or? That's kind of a whole nother conversation about leadership. I think one of the lessons that I've learned from Simon Sinek is one of the strongest skills that a leader can possess is to be in a room with those people on your team and not offer your opinion. So when a topic comes up, a question comes up, a problem comes up, to not be the first to share your opinion, but to be the last. Because the moment that the leader shares their opinion, it puts everybody else in a box. Because subconsciously, they don't want to go against the leader. Now, some people do, but they're rare. They're rare. Most people are more conformists. And so when you come into a room and say, hey, we have this problem, we need to figure out how to do this, here's what I think we should do. And then I yell out, you know, I say my suggestion. And then I say, what do you guys think? That's the wrong way to do it. That's the wrong way to do it. Instead, I should say, hey, we have this problem. We've got this situation. And what do you guys think we should do? Just sit back and listen, let them all share their thoughts. One, it gives them a sense of feeling heard, which is so important. People just need to feel that they've been heard. Even if you don't go with their idea every time, if you listen to their idea, it just opens the floodgates for them to feel comfortable to keep sharing ideas. And then the best idea always wins. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. But then number two is, as a leader, I get to hear, it's kind of selfish, I get to hear all the great ideas before I submit mine, and it might change my idea. It might inform my idea to say, ooh, let's add that in. That's a good idea. And so now it really truly gets us to the best possible idea and allows people to really feel heard. So I think it's one of those skills that leaders struggle with, because I think leaders believe they have to have the right answers all the time. Like, I have to have the right answers. I have to be the smartest in the room. The leader, in my opinion, is not the person who's the smartest in the room. It's the person who has the humility to get everybody else involved in what's happening and to buy into the mission and the vision, and then they figure out how to make it happen. And we talk about what we're doing, and that is transforming companies into, you know, well-known and trusted brands. That's our mission. How do we do that? I'm not going to have all the best answers for that. I may have some good answers, but I'm not going to have all the best answers for completing that mission. team together, though, we can find the best answers if everybody feels that they have the freedom to share what their ideas are.
Hmm. Let's talk about a little bit of what branding actually even means. Like when I think of brand, like I think of like Nike and like the Swish and or like Red Bull and their extreme athletes. And I think of like brand is like people like whatever like Rode puts out, I'll probably buy because I just really like their products and I and I love all their stuff or whatever. So like when you think of brand, do you think it's just like almost like printing money because you've built such like goodwill with people with your products and like the narrative, like whether it's like Red Bull with the athletes or whatever, like what is brand in your eyes?
Yeah, the easiest way that I can communicate brand is to think about another word for reputation. It's what people think about or how they feel when they see your logo, when they see your name, those types of things. It's like, why do people love going to Chick-fil-A? When they see that Chick-fil-A, it gives them some good feelings, maybe because they really love the chicken sandwich, maybe because they love the experience, maybe because they love how fast the drive-thru is. All of those components put together is the Chick-fil-A brand. And it makes you feel a certain way as a consumer. It makes you want to be a part of it or not be a part of it. I remember telling this to somebody a long time ago, back in our, Steak and Shake is no longer in our area. I know they're still out there, but they're not in our area. But they were known, like they were historically known for slow drive-through service, like super slow. Mm. So if I would drive by Steak and Shake and they had two cars in the drive-through, I wouldn't go. But if I drive through Chick-fil-A and they've got 20 cars in the drive-through, I will go because I know I'm going to be out in less than 10 minutes. I know it. That's I can depend on it. I can trust it because that's their brand. So to me, brand is reputation. It's what people think about or feel when they see your name or see your logo. And that's, to me, that's the entire responsibility of the company. The company's responsible for that. I'm responsible for how people feel about Beta Consulting Group.
What you were saying too, it reminds me of In-N-Out. When I go to In-N-Out, everyone, it's like one of the cheapest burgers that you can get in LA, and it's delicious every single time. And everyone that works there is like pretty smart for working at like a fast food restaurant. I heard that the managers there get paid like $100,000 a year. So I completely agree with you what you're saying about like reputation and how like that's so important. It kind of ties back almost to like customer experience to some sort of degree too, like your deliverables of like how it is at delivering your products. Is that part of it too, you think?
Yeah. I mean, the customer experience, the quality of it. Steve Jobs often says that the only culture that doesn't promote quality in their marketing is the Japanese, because quality is built into the product. They don't just talk about quality, they deliver. And that's why people often have a high opinion of Hondas, for example, and other cars or devices or things that are made in Japan, because they factor quality into the product, not into the marketing. The truth is, if your product or service is high quality, that's what people remember. If your marketing says high quality, but the product doesn't adjust to it or doesn't stand up to that standard, that's what people will actually think is this not high quality. Even though it's good to talk about it in marketing, it has to be true. And so all marketing needs to reflect the truth of the product as much as possible. In fact, that's why when I work with clients, I want to know what they've actually done. And then we work off of that, because what you put in marketing needs to be true. It needs to be congruent with the experience that a consumer has. To me, yeah, quality's got to be a huge part of it. I always tell people that the beginning of a great brand is a great product or service.
Mm. It reminds me of like Toyota. Remember the Toyota commercials where people would jump up in the air with like 300,000 miles on their car? And it's true. Like I legit bought a Toyota with 150,000 miles on it, a 4Runner, because I trust the brand, right? I trust the quality.
I have the same story. I bought a Honda Prelude with 130,000 miles on it. This was in 1998 and it was an 87. And my mom looked at me like I was crazy. Like, why are you buying a car with over 100,000 miles? It's never going to make it. But it was because I believed, because of what I'd seen, that Hondas go at least 200,000 miles. So this thing's just getting started. But my mom, she grew up with domestic cars that when it got 200,000 miles, you got rid of it. Mm. So it's a different perspective, but it's based on the history. It's based on the what's out there. It's a combination of a great product or service and great marketing together. It's not one or the other.
Mm, I think Apple's very good at this, at like producing very beautiful machines that are like easy to use. They're very sleek. I mean, obviously Steve Jobs is like one of the most brilliant marketers ever, but like, what do you think of like Apple? Why do you think Apple's brand works for them?
It's very simple. If you look at a lot of their marketing, it's one word advertisements, and it's about being a part of something that makes you better. Every user for Apple feels like they are a smarter person or better with technology because they use Apple. And Apple has done a good job of making that the case and how they talk about their products, how simple their products are to use. You know, what's interesting about Apple, and this may or may not be on topic, but Nobody's ever read the owner's manual to an Apple product ever. Nobody has ever read the owner's manual to a MacBook or to an iMac or to an iPhone or iPad or iPod or anything that they've had. They're so intuitive to use. You just feel smart the moment you put it in your hand. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how to use it. You know, they've done a great job with that. But I think their brand, their messaging, probably the best, one of the best commercial campaigns I've seen is when Apple did the commercial versus PC, where they had the really cool guy versus kind of the nerdy computer guy for representing PC. Do you want to be the nerd or do you want to be the cool guy?
Cool guy.
They created an image and a brand that you just want to be a part of. Their buying experience at Apple stores. I remember the first time I bought a MacBook was probably 2009. And the experience of walking in that store, going to a product, and somebody comes to me and helps me. And then I stand there while they go get the product, come back and check me out on the spot, and I don't have to go to a register. The buying experience was different and unique and fun, and I just wanted to go back and do it again and again and again. They really thought through that customer experience in a way that just made you feel special, made you feel smarter. And that's why they created the cult. That's why people say, well, you've drank the Kool-Aid. You've drank the Kool-Aid that Apple has. Absolutely, I have. 100%.
I also feel like culturally, they've done a good job of like teaming up with like artists and like, I don't know, Apple Music. They've kind of embedded themselves in their like lifestyle of like day-to-day life as like creatives.
Very much so. And there's always going to be some, you know, like Amazon's done a good job on the music front. Spotify, obviously, very good on that. But yeah, I mean, they've just embedded themselves kind of into the culture in a way that's pretty unique. And it's going to be hard to pull them out. It's going to be hard to uproot them from my life in particular. I know a lot of Apple users, it's the same way.
Yeah. What about like just like storytelling too? Because I feel like storytelling is important to brand as well. Like a founder story or like your story, like in general, like I feel like that really builds the connection with the fans, right? And that's how you build fans, is by kind of being vulnerable to some sort of degree about like where you've gone, where you're going to, et cetera. What's your thoughts on just like kind of like a hero's journey for like a founder?
Storytelling is everything to building a brand, because that's how the mind works. You know, there's a reason why stories have been used through the ages to communicate history, to teach morals. You think about, you know, like Jesus spoke in parables. Well, what's a parable? It's a story. It's a story that has a point at the end. It has a moral at the end. When you read a book and at the end you say the moral of the story is, this is how we communicate and this is how the brain makes sense of information. And so when you're able to tell a story, when you're able to use the fundamental elements of story in your marketing, you are inviting your listener, your prospect, into a story that they then want to be a part of. Just like a really great movie or a great book or a great song. If it includes those elements of story, you're so captivated by it and you want to know more and you want to be a part of it. And this is why it's so important for founders to tell their story, but most importantly, Jeremy, for founders who have built something to have their customers tell their story of how the product or service impacted them. But the story portion of it is non-negotiable. It is impossible to market really well without telling a really great story. Let me give you an example. In the Super Bowl, we had a lot of great commercials, and I love commercials. And one of the commercials that stood out the most to me, the one that I liked the most, was a Chevrolet commercial about a Chevy truck. It was like a 1956 mint condition blue Chevy truck. It cut to this image of the truck in front of the house, and inside the truck is an old woman. She's probably in her 80s, maybe early 90s. And her daughter is in the driver's seat. She's in the passenger seat. And her daughter says to her mom, "Mom, it's going to be a great day today." And then they start driving around town. And what she's doing is she's taking her mom to these locations just to see these sights that she remembers because her mom has Alzheimer's. And so by taking her around to these different sites, to the post office, to the grocery store, to the school, to their home that they lived in, to all these different places, it helps her mom remember things. And then she pulls back into the driveway, and waiting in the driveway is her dad, the husband. Yeah. He's in his late 80s, early 90s as well. And he's standing there in a suit, and he's got a bouquet of flowers, and he switches places with his daughter. His daughter steps out of the driver's seat. He gets into the driver's seat. He hands the flowers to his wife. And for a moment, just for a brief moment, Jeremy, they have a memory together. She remembers him, and they have a moment together. Like, what a beautiful story. It's about a car company.
It's powerful. That's very really like
a power of the. It's a power of the story that makes it work.
That's
if
so
they
crazy.
Just showed a picture of trucks just, you know, out there on the road, or trucks just, you know, in a parking lot, it doesn't mean anything. But it's the story that helps you connect and go, ooh, man, I wish I had a Chevy truck.
Pull your heartstrings with that. That's so cool.
It is.
What else do you think makes like a good story? For the one thing that I will think that is like having like a low point and then a high point or some sort of transformation. Like, what else do you think that makes like a good story?
Yeah, transformation is definitely a huge part of it. And you say low point, high point. What we call it is want and need. You need a character who has a want. They've got a desire. They got something that they want to have. And there's a problem that's kind of getting in the way of that. Because you have that conflict of I want this, but I can't get it because of this. That's the basis of a great story. And so when you think about it in business marketing, your customers have something they want. Usually it's to grow their company. It could be to save money on this cost. It could be to lower the time it takes to hire great people. I mean, whatever it is, they have a want and there's something that's getting in the way of that want. And if you can pinpoint that, not only in your business, but then in your marketing and how you communicate that, not only will people want to engage with you, but when they do, they will want to stay and use you over and over and over again. And that's the transformation that we're helping companies realize is you don't really want customers or clients in your business. That's not what you want. You want fans. You want people who are fanatical about you and what you're building, what you're doing. Because what do fans do, Jeremy? They pay full price, number one. They keep coming back, number two. And they tell everybody about it, number three. That's what every business wants. They want people that pay full price, keep coming back for more, and tell everybody about their experience. And if you can cultivate that, then you're on your way to a really exceptional brand.
100%. It reminds me too, like last couple of minutes here, but about like social proof too. I feel like social proof is like the digital gold. And I think it's really smart that you guys record social proof for companies and go out and do video testimonials for them. Because it's a lot more powerful to hear like what's coming from the voice of the customer. I could say one thing and it's going to sound like marketing, like I'm talking marketing speak. But when someone else says that 3PL Systems is like one of the best TMSs, it's a lot more powerful that they say it than I say it because it holds a lot more weight when it's their words, not ours.
Oh, 100%. And I think I tell people this all the time. I use this example almost every day. If you and I were going to go to a new restaurant tonight, Jeremy, for dinner, neither of us would ever call the restaurant and say, hey, how do you cook your steaks? Is the wine good? What's the salad like? What's the vibe like there? Are the French fries crunchy? Like you would never do that. Right? Sure. What would you do? Instead, you'd go to Yelp or some other review site, Google reviews, and you'd want to hear from the people who actually went there. What was their experience like? Good or bad? I just want to hear it. And then you're going to make your decision on whether or not to go to that restaurant based upon what you've heard. Or if somebody else gives you a recommendation, somebody you trust, you know, somebody says, hey, Jeremy, you got to go check out, you know, Javier's. That place is unbelievable. Mm. Well, of course, you're going to, you know, give that a little more weight. But the reason is because a friend told you about it. Like you heard from a customer that experienced it. And this particular customer, your friend, the trust level's super high. Right. And so what we're helping companies realize is that getting their customers to talk about their experience is incredibly powerful. And we create that content on video format, social media, graphic content, blog content, text content, so that they can start to disseminate that when they need it. I mean, how great is it to be on a sales call with somebody who's telling you their problem? And you can say, man, that sounds just like Jeremy over 3PL Systems. They were having the same issue and we did X, Y, and Z for them. And then they were able to get this was the result, whatever it was. Like to be able to weave that into your sales is social proof. You're essentially taking that customer testimonial and you're making it a part of your sales process. And it just brings a level of comfort to the buyer that, oh, you've done this before. Mm-hmm. You've done this before with somebody that you're willing to name who I could go and check if I really wanted to. Now they're not going to, but they could. And that's what they care about. That's what makes it real. That's what makes it powerful. That's what increases the trust level significantly. 70% of all buyers across the board, no matter what you're buying, whether it's, you know, retail or whatever, 7 out of 10 buyers speed up their purchasing decision when they hear from a customer.
Mm-hmm. I could totally get that.
Wouldn't you want to speed up your sales cycle? Wouldn't you want to have people say yes faster? I think all of us would say yes to that.
Yeah, I think it's all about accelerating the sales process through like social proof. And I think the thing is too, is because when you have to go do the research yourself, you're expending a lot of energy. So I think what social proof is, it's like a heuristic so that it causes you to just make a quicker decision because you're kind of following the masses. Because if someone else says it's okay, then it's a lot easier to be like on that side of like the equation essentially because they've already kind of done like the vetting.
When you have customers who have a good experience and are willing to talk about it, again, it just allows the trust level and the certainty level to increase quickly. And that's what you want. Because again, if I tell you how great our services are, okay, well, maybe I'm a good salesman and maybe you'll buy it and maybe that'll happen. man, if you hear from other people who said, yeah, you got to work with Trey and his team. I mean, in terms of messaging and testimonials, there's just nobody better. That makes it a lot easier to say yes and to fork over your hard-earned dollars for the services that we're going to provide you. And that's what you want. So social proof and having them do the work for you, doing the research for you and sharing it. I just think a lot of companies are sitting on that and they're not doing anything with it. A lot of companies have a lot of satisfied customers who aren't saying one lick about their experience. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I have one last question for you because I am kind of curious because I had my fair share of cold calling like back in the day. I don't knock it or anything that people do it. I still think that's like a way of doing business, but your business, Beta Consulting, you guys have just basically done all like social selling and like basically use social media to build the business, if I'm not mistaken. So is that the case, or do you guys actually do cold calling as well?
No, I don't do any cold calling. Not right now. It's almost all through social media, through networking, through trade shows, and word of mouth. You know, we've gotten quite a few opportunities where a lot of our customers have connected us with people in their network who needed the same type of help. And so, yeah, we haven't done any cold calling yet. We've done a little bit of cold email outreach. We're kind of playing around with that just to see if that makes a difference and just learning how to get better at that. We've been working on that a little bit, but no cold calling yet. And honestly, I've done cold calling. I really don't want to do it. I really don't want to go back out and do that again. So to me, because social media is just so easy to use and to build a network and to communicate, my thought is I don't think we're going to have to do that unless we just decide at some point to hire a sales force that doesn't know the industry or doesn't know people who will have to cold call, but that's not our plan right now.
Yeah. I'm all about like attracting versus yes. Going after something, I guess. That's kind of like my mind shift for the last couple of years, but I guess everyone's different depending on what their position is.
And that's what great marketing does. It attracts people to your brand as opposed to salespeople. I tell people this all the time. You're going to market whether you do it or not. The difference is who's going to do it. Let me tell you what I mean. If you are doing marketing activities like working on your messaging on social media, working on your messaging on your website and how you're communicating with people, how you're engaging with people on social media, the type of content you're putting out, whether it's a podcast or YouTube channel, video content, whatever it is, like that marketing attracts people to you and makes sales easier. If you don't have that, then what you're essentially saying is that you want your sales team to do the marketing. Someone's going to do the marketing. It's just whether or not it's actual marketing activities or if it's the sales team doing marketing activities like cold calling, like, we're being on social media. Who's going to do the marketing for you? That's the question. And if you want your sales team to do it, fine, let them do it. Save some money doing that, but you're wasting their time. I know as a salesperson, I'd rather spend more time talking about and closing deals than marketing. Mm-hmm. If I'm a marketer, I want to do marketing.
I read a stat actually from Charlotte Lloyd. She's a LinkedIn creator. She said that like a post from social media is like 7x more likely to close. I believe it. I think that like just like because if people already have engaged with Trey, they know you, they know you're trustworthy, that you have like a following, that you show up every day. I think all those things kind of tie into like making it that the authority, the trust, and then when they're ready to make that decision to buy something for like messaging or whatever they need help with from you for marketing wise, they're ready to buy. So I think that to me, like that's really smart. And then you're showing up all the time in those channels where they're hanging out, like on LinkedIn, they see you all the time. So I think that it's really smart. I want to close this out here with any closing thoughts.
Well, I think like your reputation, your brand is the most valuable asset that you own as a business, and it should be treated accordingly. You know, when you think about your personal reputation, that's worth more than silver and gold, as an old ancient Hebrew parable would say. And I would say the same thing of your brand for a company, you know, and that you should treat your brand as the most valuable asset that you have, because a good brand can bring you premium prices, can bring you loyalty, can bring you fans, can bring you steady business. A bad brand can put you out of business pretty quickly. And it starts internally. Your brand starts with your team and your people and your culture, and it extends out to the marketplace. But it is the most important, most valuable asset that every company has. And so my word of caution and encouragement is to treat it accordingly.
And then where do people find you, Trey? And if they want, obviously Trey Griggs on LinkedIn, but where else?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the easiest way on every social media platform for the most part. My handle is TreyGriggs24. Certainly our website's a great way to connect with us, betaconsultinggroup.com. And if you click that button right in the middle of our website to schedule a call, it's going to be with me. And I would love to meet you and hear your story and help you tell yours to the marketplace. So check out our website or check me out on LinkedIn, shoot over a DM, whatever. I would love to connect with you and hear more about your story and what you're trying to build and how we could help you out with that.
Thanks for sticking around to the end of the episode with Trey Griggs. It's always fun getting to talk to other marketers, and I do agree with him. I feel like branding is really what your reputation is of your company, what people are thinking about the company when no one's around. So branding is very important. It makes sense to actually treat it accordingly. Anyways, if you enjoy 3PL Live, please review us on Spotify or Apple. We appreciate you and have a great weekend.